Now what he does next is he talks about history's transcendent author, right?
I wonder who that is.
Yeah. He says, this picture of an unfathomable and transcendent Lord presiding over the wondrous works of his hands lends us to a particular model of divine sovereignty and providence. God doesn't set forth a kind of a chain reaction of events, right, in time and space that follow a crass form of cause and effect, right? History is not, he tells us, an elaborate maze of dominoes set in motion by the primordial first cause, right? The determinism that the Bible ascribes to God, he tells us, is not mechanistic, you know, as though we humans were just clogs in a grand machine, right?
To be sure, we must not pretend that we can know the precise manner of how God causally determines the course of events in history. That's kind of the hidden things belong to God and everything else is revealed in Scripture. There is a dynamic mystery to the divine outworking of God's decree, and both sides have to deal with mystery at some point. Mm-hmm. The model that best suits God provides that best suits God's providence evokes the image of a transcendent author. Yet God is not like a Shakespeare, Milton, Tolstoy, or good old Tolkien himself. The Most High is not like an author. He is the author. The human author is like him.
Yeah. So he's not like them. They're like him. Right. Right?
Which someone like Tolkien or Lewis or modern authors, they kind of express this mythology, and they say within the scope of human life and understanding, we are writing stories that go towards the you know, the three act structure with you have the person and the fall and the rise and the resolution and the conclusion, and that's the Christian story right there.
And
both, especially Tolkien and Lewis, recognize this, and they see it in other stories and other patterns. And the great stories that we have, we see ourselves in them because they speak to the human condition of being part of God's creation, whether the authors acknowledge God or not.
Right. And in coming chapters, he's going to really explain this kind of authorship and that sort of thing, right? He says, history is not a chess match whereby God merely anticipates the moves of his creatures, right? Like some grand master.
Right. Well, the bishop's moving sideways. I better counteract with my rook.
Such a model, he tells us, of providence places God in the position of acting and reacting in relation to the, you know, semi-autonomous plans of others seeking to rest control of history for themselves. He says, this kind of idea suggests that his plans operate kind of on the fly, right? They're contingent and dependent on each desperate direction that his creatures take. He says that is not how God operates, right?
Right. That's kind of the, I look down the corridors of time and I chose you because you will choose me, but I don't really know what that means, because why does he have to choose me if I'm going to choose him? and this God who kind of struggles to say, okay, I know Patrick really well, and I know he's going to choose the Mountain Dew. Oh, you know what? He accidentally chose not the Mountain Dew. He chose the Cherry Pepsi.
All right, so now I'm going to have to do this.
Yeah, now everything's all upended, and so now the line of succession moves to the youngest or something like that. So such a God would not invoke our confidence or desire of worship. In contrast, the God that the psalmist declares is a bulwark for our trust in him. Psalm 33:8-9 says, let all the earth fear Yahweh. Let all the inhabitants of the world stand in awe of him. For he spoke and it was done. He commanded and it stood fast. So there's no reliance on something else. It's he spoke and what happened? The first time he spoke, everything happened, and he commanded, and things happened. And so he tells, you know, Jonah, go to the Ninevites. Jonah's like, I hate the Ninevites. There's no way you're going to get me there. And guess what? He gets there.
Yeah.
Through a hook or by fish. And then on the beach, he has to stay in the hot sun even more so. If he would have just went there, I'm sure it would have been a nice walk and he would have made friends. You know. Such a God gives us confidence that when tragedy strikes, when we hoped for good and evil came And when we waited for light and darkness came, as Job 30 says, there is no need to fret. Mm-hmm. God is in control. There's nothing outside. Yes, things might befall us. We might be in pain. We might suffer. Again, this all leading us towards further clarification, discussion on what evil is. So we don't trip down a well and suddenly we're hidden from God and God's looking out for us. And that's, in Genesis 3, when Adam and Eve falls, you know, oh, God is searching for him. Adam, come out. Where are you? Mm-hmm. There's something happening there. He's not actually asking this because he's lost sight of who, right. where Adam and Eve is right. In the world that he made. He's doing it for a purpose there.
Yeah, good. And so next, what he does then is you have this powerful God who works providentially throughout all of his creation to accomplish his will. What does that do for us in terms of our choosing, right? In terms of our ability to make choices. And so that's what he deals with next, right? The compatibility of divine and human actions. He says, when we consider God's sovereignty over the forest, few people object, right? Oh, yeah, you know, he's over the forest. But when we consider sovereign control over individual trees, people start to squirm in their seats, right? Especially if those trees include the leaves, branches, trunks, roots of their own personal lives, right? And so this fact, he says, human actions are not exempt from the providence of God, but represent the particular emphasis of Scripture. He says God's fixed decrees includes the future action of specific individuals. Human choices, he says, are determined by God, right? So even our choices are determined by God. Now, again, we're going to have to work. He's going to have to work that out for us because, you know, it sure seems like I'm making my own choices, right? And I am not. Is he saying I'm not that I'm a puppet? Well, we'll have to see. Right. But he's clearly not saying that, right?
We just think we're puppets, or we don't think we're puppets because we're being very well puppeted.
That's right.
But this does not entail some notion of Christian fatalism, this oxymoron, if there ever was one. God is not a grand puppet master, and we are not dangling marionettes devoid of active minds, emotions, desires, and wills. You know, we're not these robots. We're making real choices with real consequences that proceed from real deliberations, motives, circumstances that shape the outcome of those choices. Those things are happening, and we're held responsible for them.
Yeah.
Can I go back to being a robot? Robot's easy. Yeah. Nonetheless, those choices dovetail perfectly with the sovereign determinations of God. This is known in today's philosophical parlance as compatibilism. Yeah. And again, what we're going to go through, we talked about with him in, I think, episode 13 with his interview of his book, What About Free Will? And so, again, we're not going to be able to cover everything, just as he doesn't cover everything there. He wrote another book first to do that. So if you have more questions, we didn't answer them correctly, see the book.
Yeah.